Today I have Bryson Stein or so up there, almost in the 90s already. So thanks for talking to me. Sponsored Bison Rider, Bison Athlete. And, you know, that's a great company. Sounds like they're doing pretty well. Robert and Tasha over there. And I've been getting to know them pretty well over the last year.
Oh, yeah. Rob and Tasha are great. Great company, too.
For sure. So tell me a little bit about yourself. I don't think we've actually met in person, but I'm glad to meet someone new.
Yeah, no. My name is Bryson. I'm 22 years old, born in Evansville, Indiana, and live most of my life in Illinois, central Illinois area. So a lot of the fast flat trackers coming from Illinois. But I'm currently active duty Navy. And been racing and riding motorcycles since I was five.
You're riding motocross or road racing, flat track, hill climb, ice racing, a little bit of everything. What's your discipline?
So I started out on four-wheelers doing flat track, but I then started racing supermoto and then went to road racing in 2015. And I've been dabbling in some flat track here and there just as training.
Awesome. Sounds like a good foundation, you know, starting in the dirt, doing flat track, and even having some four-wheel experience probably helps you out.
Oh, yeah.
What series are you racing now, and what are your plans for this coming year?
For this year, I'm going to be running in the WIRA North Central region. I've usually been racing with CCS, but I just decided to switch it up, see some new tracks, see some new competition. And I'm also a part of the Pure Attitude Racing Academy. I'm going to be running some Moto America events with them and representing them.
That's pretty exciting. So doing some wild card events, wild card races?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're looking at doing Road America, maybe Road Atlanta, and Barber for sure.
Oh, heck yeah. Those are some big name tracks. And if you can go fast there, you can go fast anywhere.
For sure.
So being with Pure Attitude Racing, that's got to be a new step for you.
Absolutely. I've been talking to Michael since 2020.
Michael Hill?
And we've been, yes, Michael Hill. Yep. And I've been talking to him since 2020. Just trying to learn more about the team and everybody that's in there, talking to Dean and Trevor and Liam, the other rider, and they just picked up Chase Black this year. So we're slowly growing.
That's pretty cool. I got four or five riders now. And so I would assume you're an expert CCS or WIRA racer?
Yes.
And so this would be your first year making your pro debut?
No, I actually made my pro debut back in 2020. I raced Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
You raced pro in 2020, so now you're a veteran. It's your third year going into it as a pro, and so you've got to have some confidence under your belt.
Yes and no. I do have the confidence, but not really a veteran. I only ran the one race back in 2020. Took last year off due to some stuff with my job being in the military, wasn't able to really make any races. But this year we're going to try and do a full season of WIRA and definitely do some more Moto America rounds. So we're excited.
Yeah, for sure. And with WIRA North Central, you're probably going to Granton. Only the one direction now, they don't do the counterclockwise, I think.
Yeah, Granton. There's some tracks in Ohio and then also Pitt in Pennsylvania.
And I'll be working at a few of those races for Moto America and WIRA. I'm doing like six rounds of Moto America corner working as a track marshal. So actually I'm leaving next Wednesday for Daytona at the 200. So I'll be working the air fence program and then doing flagging the rest of the day. So I'm excited.
Right on. You're going to have one of the best seats.
Yeah. So unfortunately you get to meet some of the riders close up in person, but I like to help out. You know, I've been in those situations. I've crashed on the track like 15 times or something. And you know what you want to happen if you've crashed. You don't want someone like pulling your arm if you have a broken shoulder or something. You know, you got to be with them. But also you need to come here now and get off the track, you know, watch your back. That's something I've noticed is riders don't a lot of riders, not all the riders, but some riders don't watch their back at all after they crash. And it's like, you got to be paying attention, because just because there's a yellow flag doesn't mean people aren't going to be pushing.
Exactly. Yeah. And definitely not the way you want to probably be meeting some of these riders.
Yeah. It's not like I'm trying to chat them up too much. It's like, you know, they're probably pretty sad. Sometimes they're throwing tantrums, the younger kids, you know? So a little bit of consoling them sometimes, being just being there for them.
For sure.
But I was just down in Florida this past weekend for the St. Petersburg IndyCar race. I was working that event as a volunteer. And that was my first time doing IndyCar or any sports car, an open wheel. And they had like 10 different races, a bunch of different classes. They had the Mazda MX-5 Cup. They had the GT Series. There was Indy Lights. It was like a Formula 2000 type class, I think US 2000. And then the full-on Indy cars. And so it was awesome to be there and see that kind of action. A bunch of cars hit the wall pretty good. I saw one, there was a good rollover where in the Mazda class, I think he ran up on his wheel and flipped a couple times, but they have a good roll cage there. So he just crawled out the top and called it a day.
That's crazy.
So that was my first time working a street circuit. It's not always the best viewing, I'd say, but it was really a different kind of track and cool in its own way.
How would it compare to being a quarter marshal for road racing?
So this time, this was the first time I was not actually a quarter marshal. This time, you know, I showed up and I'm here and I'd like to be a marshal. That's what I applied for, but there's hundreds of people who do it. So, and it's my first event. They didn't know me too well. So maybe next year I'll be able to get up higher in the rankings or a more favorable position that I'd like anyways, because this time I was put on crowd control, which means that I'm basically fun police and telling people I'm just standing. My whole job, my one job for the whole weekend is to be at gate one between turn 5 and 6, which is just a big bridge, and they can't leave on top or walk out on top of the bridge with anything lit, like a cigarette or a cigar, or they can't have any open container, even food that's in a container, anything that's open that could spill onto the racetrack is a hazard. It's because they're walking on top of the racetrack, or they could potentially throw it up, you know, and then it could land on the track. So that would be a bad thing for the drivers. So we got to make sure they don't do that. So always, you know, people don't realize that's a rule. And so we're just standing there, maybe anywhere from 1 to 4 of us, based on who's taking breaks or, you know, watching the race for a minute and coming back. So we're just, you know, scanning the crowd and watching people's hands the whole time to make sure they don't cross the track with any fluids or liquids or things like that, or ice cream even. And so most people are like, oh yeah, no problem. I'll just drink it real quick, or they throw it away and they're like, oh, thank you for your help. And I didn't know that. Thanks. You know, thanks for being here. There's only one person who gave us some trouble, but, even that, he was over in 15 seconds and he was on his way. So, it was a unique experience, but it's also, you know, you have to be stern with people, and everyone's wearing earplugs and it's super loud environment, so they might not hear you anyways. So you can't take offense to them like not hearing you. You just kind of get in their way so they can't cross in front of you if they're really ignoring you, or like you gotta tap them on the shoulder politely or get their attention somehow. It's like it's kind of difficult at times, but it was a unique experience.
Sounds like the IndyCar program is pretty strict on the rules.
Yeah, they are. I mean, imagine you're going on a racetrack and you have now a different surface than you were expecting. But I don't know. That's just, I was following my orders. But have you ever done any marshalling or any working for the organizations?
I have not, no. My dad, though, back when he was first getting into the racing scene, he started out as a corner marshal, and that was kind of his introduction into road racing in a club level.
Yeah, it's a wide range of people. You get anywhere from people who are just interested in the sport and want to help out, or people who have raced in the past, or crew chiefs, or all sorts of officials who have been in tons of different positions.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's been even if you're not even racing, you're still at the track, so you can't really complain. You're still seeing all them, getting some free entertainment.
Yeah, it was really good people watching, man. there's some pretty strange looking people out there, but it's just it's fun to analyze or to just watch, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm guilty of being a people watcher.
I was actually really surprised, like, how many people had amputated limbs. I had never been really just staring and watching people all day, but there was like probably a dozen or more. I don't know if that's because they're all racing drivers and like athletes and like extreme sports enthusiasts, or if that's just a normal segment of the population, but it's just, you don't realize. And also there's a massive amount of stairs that are pretty steep that everybody has to climb. So you see it, it sticks out more, right? Because they have to use those limbs.
Right.
But so tell me about your experience with racing and injuries, if you had any. Have you been a good crasher, per se?
Well, not the first time. The first race I ever did, I was hit by another rider on track and ended up breaking my hand, shattered my whole right hand. So that was back in 2015. But ever since then, I've learned how to crash well. And never really had any injuries, knock on wood. But yeah.
I hear that if you are taken out and it's more abrupt or you're not expecting it, it can be a worse fall because you don't really have as much control over how your body lands.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I didn't even see it coming either. The guy had run off the track, and then when he came back on, he just collided straight into each other. It was ran right in my line. But yeah, it was crazy experience. Definitely was unexpected.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And I know that hand and wrist injuries are typically pretty problematic because there's not a lot of blood flow to that area, so it can take a lot longer to heal.
Yeah, I ended up getting two pins in my right hand. The day of the surgery, the doctor tried to re-fracture my thumb because it wasn't growing in properly, but I was pounding milk left and right, so he couldn't end up re-breaking it. But we ended up turning out pretty well, I'd say. I've got full function of my hand and can't really complain there. So shout out to Midwest Orthopedic Center.
A lot of the strength as well, because that's a big thing is your hand, or any time you break something, it atrophies a lot. You lose a lot of that muscle mass.
Yeah, it was definitely difficult at first, being able to grab the throttle and twist and just hand strength, and then also applying it individually to the fingers when breaking. But I'd say we recovered pretty well.
Good. And so I don't know if you mentioned it yet, but what kind of bike are you riding? And tell me about some of the mods you have to it, some of the brands or parts that you got on it.
So this year I'll be riding a Suzuki SV650 in the Twins Cup and also with the Wira. We've got an M4 exhaust on there. My dad usually does a lot of the work to it, so I'm no mechanic by any means. He likes to poke fun at that sore spot on my heart. Wish I was a good mechanic, but no, we've got an M4 exhaust on there, Dunlop tires for the Moto America. We may try and dabble into some Pirellis or Michelins for the club racing just to do some testing and see how they feel. But yeah, we got some goodies on there. I'm excited to start testing it and see what we can do.
Awesome. You know, I have to mention my business, ericswineracing.com and shopesr.com, because I actually sell M4 exhausts and many other brands. I have about 34 motorsports brands, from motorcycle road racing to parts and gear brands and motocross, as well as a little bit of mountain bike parts. And then I also have a whole batch of like 1,000 items of my own personal things and things I've found at garage sales and resale shops, like CDs and DVDs and clothing items and electronics, artwork, all kinds of, I have tires. I just sold a tire like 20 minutes ago, takeoffs. So
ultra bang.
Everything I can get my hands on. Although now I think big enough, I have enough brands that I can get away from the smaller $50 stuff in my basement. And I think I'm going to donate maybe 1,000 items that are under $50 by the end of the year is, I think, my next goal, because it's not really selling that great anymore. It's all stuff kind of been picked through that's like leftover. I mean, I have 150 cassette tapes, you know, probably 150 record vinyl albums that are, it's cool to have, and like people collect them still. They're not super high value items that it really doesn't move the needle that much. If you sell like 10 cassette tapes, like, great, you know, I could sell a racing suit or an exhaust, and it's way better for me, and it takes less time. So it's like, what's my time worth right now? You know, it's kind of, I've outgrown that phase, I think.
Right. Well, I mean, you could always donate it to the Red Flag Fund. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah. I actually, whenever I purchase something on Amazon, I do the Amazon Smile, and you can insert your own charity that you want to donate to when you purchase something. And so I donate to the Red Flag Fund, or it's the Air Fence Road Racing World charity. I'm not sure if it's the exact same one, but it's for air fences specifically.
Yeah, so the Red Flag Fund, they usually help out with riders who have gotten seriously injured in an accident, whether it be racing or whatnot. And back in the day when my dad was still racing, there was a rider who had gotten paralyzed, and they used that money that they raised during the fundraiser, and they bought him a power chair. So they do good stuff.
Yeah. I wish we didn't have to have those as often. And I think gear is getting better, but it's good to have that when you need it.
For sure. Yeah. Hopefully one day I don't have to use it, but if it's still around, I'd gladly. But
for sure. And is there anything on your list you wanted to talk about today?
We can talk about my family, how I kind of my father and the whole racing scene with him growing up.
How did he get your father was into racing, and so he kind of brought you into that world?
Yeah, he started out as a drag racer. He had an old Kawasaki H2 750 triples.
Yeah,
started out with that, and then he started getting into the road race scene on I believe an RZ350. So started racing then, and then that's when he first saw the SV650, and he was working twice as hard against these SVs, and he's like, I gotta give me one of those. But that ended up leading on to him racing in the AMA's endurance series, Moto ST. And so yeah, he definitely grew up around all the cool guys at the track as a kid, meeting Aaron Yates, Matt Mladen, Ben Spies, all these big names that are out there, and now we're seeing them in the pits as crew chiefs and whatnot for like Aaron Yates and Ashton Yates, the father-son duo. And that's kind of where you got going on here too with our program. So
yeah, see that coming back and showing the next generation the ropes. A lot of people, I think, in the road racing community have that, but there's also maybe another half that doesn't have that. You know, my parents had nothing to do with racing. My uncle really liked racing, but he had died, you know, 11, 12 years before I started racing. So I knew we'd never really talked about it between us, but and so much so that my parents didn't even want me to buy a motorcycle in the first place. Because my dad had broken his arm jumping his bike as a kid going off a ramp or something, and he's like, oh, you got to stay away from those, you know. So it was always a taboo thing, so I had to go around the hard route, and I was like, okay, well, I have to prove to them I'm going to do it the safe way. So I took the courses, like the Motorcycle Safety Foundation courses, the basic rider course, the advanced rider courses just as a street rider. I told him I'd wear all the gear. So I bought a jacket and boots and tried to not be a squid too much. You gotta find another route.
For sure. Yeah. My dad and I have definitely done some, pretty dumb riding activities throughout our days. So, but we've kind of learned from them.
But I'm sure it creates a good bonding experience riding with him.
For sure. Yeah. That was definitely one of my bucket list goals, was to beat him on track. And I did that back in 2018. It was funny because we were going down the front straight at Blackhawk, and he was riding, we're on the same bike, but he looked back on the front straightaway to see where I was at, and I was just right there behind him. And he did a double take, like, what in the world? Where did you come from, type thing? And I'm sitting there back there just waving at him, like, come on, let's go.
So it sounds like you're probably on the SVs, because he was on the SVs and you want to stay in that same path.
Yeah. So he's been around SVs for about 20 years now. And so he's got a lot of knowledge when it comes to that bike. And that's, I think we were in a FZ07 last year in 2020 for Moto America, but we just really didn't have any info on them, and it was a brand new bike. And so that's why this year we're kind of taking a step back, even though we're kind of losing a little bit in the power and weight side. We think we're going to have a better chance at having better results. So
you think the Suzuki is the bike to be on right now?
Say again.
Do you think that the Suzuki is the bike to be on right now?
I think it's still competitive. It takes a lot to make them competitive, but I think they definitely can get on the podium if needed. I mean, Trevor Standish last year, he even won a race on his SV650. But right now, a lot of people are on Aprilias, and I'm told they handle just like an SV, if not better. So, and if they've already got the power that they're making, it's going to be tough, but I think we're going to have some in store for some people.
Yeah. I think it's cool that Aprilia just came out with that RS660, and I think it's a new platform. It's a new bike that is new to the market, but I think it's having some reliability issues with their engines, and you're kind of taking a little bit of a gamble on a new machine. You know, it might be new. This doesn't mean it's always better.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And so something that's proven, like the Suzuki SV650, that's like such a iconic bike for that class.
For sure. The first year that the Twins Cup came out, there was so many SVs. It was ridiculous. Now, and then it became the FZ07 class, and then now it's the Aprilia class. And so it's, I think now that everybody's starting to get information on the bikes, they're going to start, I think it'll still be pretty level playing field in the most part. It'll really come down to who's the better rider, and then also who's the better builder. It's definitely a big builder's class.
Yeah, and even the Ducatis are showing well. They were winning a few races there for a while.
Yeah, Michael Barnes on the Monster, he did pretty well.
Yeah, I think it was Road Atlanta. He was killing it one of the years.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But yeah, man, it's interesting. What are your thoughts on the 600 class versus the SV or the Twins Cup?
In regards to Moto America or just any 600 class?
Well, like the Moto America, the new Super Sport class. Would you ever consider? I think it's okay, or it's fair to say that the Super Sport class, 600 class, is a step up from the Twins Cup, or is that unfair?
No, it's definitely fair to say the 600 class is definitely a much better, I would say, now jump into the following class of stock 1000 rather than a 600 straight to 1000. Granted, you're still going to have a lot of your R6s in there, ZX6s, but you're going to have a lot more power coming out of them. I think everybody's going to be amazed, even with the R6 against the Triumph and the Ducati. I think they're still going to show some muscle there. So,
yeah, I think it'll take some time with the new rules package to get a fair balance of performance, because even in the sports car classes, they're always changing things around a little bit here and there, giving somebody, you know, more room for airflow, or maybe adding ballast to another bike. What do you think that, here's a hypothetical question for you. Do you think that there should be a total weight for a rider and bike combination, and so everybody in the field is the exact same weight combined? Or do you think it's fine to have this discrepancies in weights from bikes or people?
I think there should maybe be a minimum weight, but in regards to having it be like a superbike class, like the twins or superbike in general, I mean, superbike, you can do anything to them. So making them as light as possible is really the goal, along with power.
Right. I'm just trying to think of, should it be more spec, so it's more even, or should it be up to developer's choice?
I think it should be up to the developer's choice, even though the more even would create a lot of more action-packed racing, more close racing for the fans.
Yeah. It'd be cool to have, I guess they're trying to do that with like stock 1000 and Superbike, but it never feels like it's completely stock, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they don't allow a lot of the things to be done. For example, get around the stock wheels, at least from my knowledge. You can't go buy it and put Marchesinis or OZ wheels on there. And you got to have the stock master cylinder. The R1s, one of the tricks to get it to handle is with the swing arm, you got to extend it, and you can't even do that. So that's why you don't really see the R1 being super competitive in the stock 1000 class.
Oh, they're actually making the swing arm longer for a longer wheelbase?
Yes. Yeah.
It gives it more stability, I would assume.
Stability, traction, everything.
Okay, and probably wheelies a little harder.
A little less wheelies, being a little bit longer wheelbase, but.
But there's always a happy medium. You don't want it to be a foot wider.
Yeah, you don't need a drag bike going into turn one. That's for sure.
That's what a lot of the guys do. They're like, oh, I stretched out my bike. This is really fast now. I'm like, kind of.
Maybe not.
Until the corner comes, and then you're like, oh, I can't turn the bike now.
What is this corner?
Because then you get this huge discrepancy between street guy's skill and racetrack novice even skill, right?
True. Yeah, you get a lot of street squids coming out on track, and they completely freeze up because they weren't expecting turn one to come up that fast or whatnot. So it's definitely fun to see. I bet it, even as a corner marshal, watching some of these new riders come out, and you're like, there was a corner there as they blow turn one.
Yeah, man, you definitely see problematic riders all the time. you notice, because as you're going by, so for people who don't know, we're always counting bikes or counting numbers on number plates. We're reading your numbers, and we're mentally saying, okay, that's bike number 14, it's blue and white. That's bike number 34, green Kawasaki, you know, and we're making like notes about these people mentally as they go by. And every time you're like 14, 34, 76, 45, you know, and getting like an order or a count of who's in front of who. And then you start seeing, oh, well, 45 is going up and passing everybody. He's a guy to keep an eye on. He's probably a really fast rider. Or you see, rider, whatever his number is, missing the apex 7 times in a row. You're like, what the hell is this guy doing? And then shifting the wrong way and like going off the track and like, oh my goodness, this guy's gonna crash. And sure enough, later on he crashes. I'm like, I told you so.
Called it.
So sometimes it's like, man, I wish I could like coach these riders a little bit, or like talk to them like, hey man, maybe you just should go try going a little slower next time. Because you miss the apex every single time you went through it. Like, I know people are trying different things, and people are at all different skill levels. Maybe they've never seen the track before. Maybe it's a new bike. Maybe it's a new tire compound. But if you're making mistakes lap after lap after lap, maybe you should take a break, come back. Hopefully it's practice, or you work on these things, or maybe a track day or something. So, but race events, you may have practice, qualify, then race. It goes pretty quick. But if you're hitting, if you're missing all your marks, you should probably rethink what you're doing.
Yeah, you might want to take a few steps back in the whole trying to make a lap record and actually try and hit your markers, hit your exit points, entry points, brake markers, all of it.
So what are some of your methods when you go into a weekend to try to find time or get up to speed?
I'm usually either playing Ride 4. That's definitely a big helper when it comes to learning a new track. Watching videos on YouTube, whether it be, like, for example, Indianapolis Motor Speedway. There's only one other time that the pro event was there. Otherwise, it's been MotoGP, and I was watching videos of Rossi racing in their MotoGP. But other than that, it's really just go out there and just ride the track, learn it as best you can. I'm still learning myself. I'm not an amazing rider like some of these other guys. I'm still learning in the game. I'm still pretty fresh into it all, but I feel like I've got some pretty good raw talent. And so for like the Indianapolis weekend, we just went into it and just rode the track and did as best we could.
And that's a tough one because that's a track you're never going to get a track day at.
Yeah, absolutely not.
I mean, it's like,
I actually just did my first ever track day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did my first ever track day as down in Homestead, Miami.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we went down there and it was a really good track. Definitely enjoyed the weather being in January. But yeah, we did the first ever track day. I had to start from the ground up, had to go through novice and then get the bump to intermediate and then get the bump back to advanced, where I wish I would have started out to begin with. That way I could actually get some good testing in, but it is what it is. I had a good time.
And I was actually just at Homestead, Miami a couple of weeks ago for the CCS round. And it's a beautiful track. I walked the whole track and was out there for the weekend, but beautiful area. And, you know, it's similar to Daytona in that it's like I got a stadium and everything, and it's all kind of enclosed. I heard a horror story, though, from years ago. I don't know if it was a hurricane or just immense amount of, I think it was just wind and a thunderstorm and rain, but it rained so much in there that it flooded the exits. And it's a circle, it's a dome, so they couldn't actually exit the facility. They were trapped inside for a while, and they had to move the barriers. They had to, like, destroy the side of the track to actually have them excavate and escape from all the rain. That's wild.
That's insane.
But
that is totally insane.
You know, I'm thinking about moving to Florida, but that's what I worry about.
The hurricanes, yeah,
in the water, and the threat that it could be underwater in 10 years or whatever the number is.
Well, New Atlantis.
But yeah, man, so doing your first track day ever, everybody has to start out a novice. You know, they can't just let you go run in advance and hurt yourself. You got to be vetted, everybody, I think, unless you have some sort of previous racing experience or racing license from another organization. If you have never been on any track before other than go-karts don't really count. You're like at your local place. You're not accredited yet. I think it's okay to start novice, you know. But when I did my first couple track days in novice, I was like, I go faster than this on the street. You know, the reason I had just the reason I went to the track in the first place is because I got arrested for speeding on the street doing like 77 over in a 70. So like I was comfortable with going fast. It's just I had not really been doing a lot of turns and corners. I had all of that to learn, and braking, obviously, and accelerating. So, you know, all of it. But yeah, so you start there and then you slowly move your way up to intermediate and advanced, and that usually takes a day or two or a couple of weekends for most people. But some people stay in novice or intermediate for years.
Yeah, it's definitely a humbling experience going back and starting in the novice, and just it's a good refresher. Some of the things I even forgot as a racer. You just overthink it, overlook it. I ended up going from novice to advanced the same weekend. So that was, it was kind of a pat on the back, I guess, sort of.
Yeah.
But no, it was a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun.
For sure. And you already had some supermoto experience and all that and racing before. So that's probably why you advanced so quickly.
A little bit. Yeah, definitely learning from my dad and then riding supermoto and flat track, for sure.
So you guys, now you're going to be on this new team, but I would assume you, in the past, you and your dad were at the track together most of the time?
Yeah, I've been riding with the family team for my whole racing career. This is the first time I've been with a different team, but I'm excited learning how they operate and hopefully just keep progressing and keep getting better results each time out.
So do you think it's going to be hard on your dad not having his hands in the mix and helping fix the bikes? Or what's his thought on that?
Oh, he's thrilled, actually. He's tired. He's like, let them work on everything.
Give it to someone who does it for a career, right?
Do what?
Give it to like a seasoned career mechanic.
Oh, yeah. He's seen it all. He's done it all. So he's tired. He wants a break. He wants to go on vacation and relax some. So actually enjoy the racing side of it.
Yeah. It's a whole new side when you don't have to be working on the bikes and putting on the tires and the tire warmers and, you know, bleeding the brakes again.
Exactly.
So you say you're not a mechanic, but you can't be a professional without getting at least a little bit under your belt.
Yeah, I know how to do the basics, oil change, brake bleeds, changing pads, tires, all that stuff. A little bit here and there, valve adjustment, but nothing too crazy. I'm no engine builder, that's for sure.
Yeah, but if you're a racer, you know probably 90% more than the average person.
I may be up to for debate on that.
You don't think so?
Nah, not me at least.
See, like I would not say I'm a mechanic either, but I was considering like applying to a race team as a mechanic because I could do that. Like I'm not an engine builder. I've never done suspension internals, but I've taken apart and put together an entire motorcycle with the help of YouTube videos, a whole bunch of manuals and phone calls and FaceTime conversations and extra hands here and there. And, you know, of course, friends. But, I mean, it's all nuts and bolts in the end.
That's true. And nothing like being YouTube certified mechanic. That's for sure.
You know, you can learn a lot from YouTube. And there's also probably a lot of bad information out there you got to sift through, too.
True. There's definitely some great content on there.
And, you know, from going to the track, I'm sure you've seen it. Everybody is going to give you advice. Everybody has an opinion on whether it's riding style or setup or turn-in preference or line choice. And some people are going to give you bad advice. Some people think it's good advice. They're not maybe trying to deceive you or lie to you, but it may not be always the right answer.
Yeah, sometimes it's the good answer. Sometimes it's not the good answer, and that just is, everybody's got their own personal opinion and their own ways.
So you gotta take it with a grain of salt. You might want to try out or have an open mind to some opinions or some different viewpoints, but it might not always be the gospel. Like I was kind of hurt a little bit when as you progress from like novice to intermediate to advanced to like novice racer to expert racer, you get told different things at different stages, right? You're not told what to do as a professional racer your first day out at the racetrack. Like those are the wrong concepts you need to learn. You learn things at different times. But what they told me at the beginning was not really how you're supposed to ride when you're racing professionally, right? It's a totally different body position kind of thing. Like, I don't know. At first I was taken aback, like, oh, I kind of need to change what I'm doing here from what they told me at first, you know?
Yeah, definitely. There's some things that you learn along the way as you slowly progress into becoming a faster rider and a more better, just a better rider overall. So,
yeah. And so tell me about Bison. Do you wear their suits? I think they have gloves too, maybe undersuits.
So Pure Attitude, they signed a deal with Bison this year, so that we're all going to be rocking some Bison apparel, some Bison suits. Definitely not going to miss us on track, that's for sure. But they're going to do a big reveal for Trevor and Liam, I think Chase as well, down in Daytona. So that'll be firsthand for everybody to see. And then when I do the Road America round, everybody will get a big reveal of my suit. So
nice. Can you reveal any color schemes or any patterns in mind?
Orange.
Orange. That's always it's always nice to have a distinguishable color when you're sorting through 150,000 pictures from the weekends, right? From all the different riders.
For sure. One of the rules in the family was to be able to be spotted on track, and bright neon orange is definitely a way to be seen.
Yeah. You know, I did like primer gray bodywork. I didn't even paint mine for a little while. But then I had blue and yellow was my main colors. I did Kawasaki green and black, but that only lasted like 2 weekends because I crashed the crap out of my bike. And then I painted that color just because. But then my Triumph was all black. I like that a lot. The all black, matte black, no shine. And then I had like a black and white suit. And for a while, my suit was actually all black. I had a black helmet, black gloves, and black boots. Everything was black.
You were probably really hot, weren't you?
It was actually really hot. I wouldn't recommend it. I liked how it looked, but it was like, and then I had a gold shield. I like gold accents, mirrored visor shield. So you couldn't see my eyes. I like that stealthy look where you can't see your eyes. Are you about that, or do you like to have in the clear visor?
I'm more of the clear, maybe some, definitely a clear visor or just a slightly tinted visor. I'm not really a big fan of the mirrored. I think it looks a little cheesy in my opinion, but a lot of your street squids are out there with chrome visors and it just kind of looks goofy.
Yeah, no, I guess not a lot of people wear it, but I just kind of like it. It feels like it's a mask. You can't, like John Cena, you can't see me. Right? I don't know. I don't think it affects anybody because you're not really looking at anybody ever when you're racing, unless you're on a straightaway, you might glance for a second. But it's pretty rare that you're actually trying to make eye contact with another rider.
Yeah, not unless you're pretty angry about what just happened in the last turn.
And that's fairly rare. I mean, you get some gesticulation. Are you a rider who does this at other riders do you try to stay pretty calm out there?
I'm usually pretty calm out there unless somebody gives me a really good reason to like completely chops off my front end. But no, I would say I'm a pretty calm rider. I'd rather do all of my talking on the track than definitely in the pits.
Leave it all on track, right?
Leave it all on the track.
Oh, I mean, professional hockey players are allowed to fight. Do you think motorcycle racers would be allowed to fight in the ground?
Maybe in some behind the scenes late night pit shenanigans. I don't know.
I mean, you got helmets on and gloves already.
Oh man, don't get me started. No, I'm just playing.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's no other sport that allows fighting if you don't like the other guy.
Well, I mean, back in the day when Aaron Yates was still alive, I'm pretty sure his nickname was what? Dropkick?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it really should be a part of the sport. I just think it's a funny talking point.
Definitely a funny talking point. But yeah, you get a fine for wheelies and burnouts, let alone if you were to try and fight somebody in the gravel trap.
I don't understand the wheelies and burnouts. I do understand if it's under red flag conditions, you do a wheelie and burnout, you're definitely going to fine, right? If you do anything dangerous, sure. Red flag, definite fine. I get that. If it's at the end of a race and you're winning or you're dead last, I don't care. Do a wheelie over the start finish, fine. I mean, wheelies are a part of motorcycle riding. It happens probably several times a lap, an inch or two maybe, you know, but under braking zones, it's going to happen with your rear tire. You're going to do an endo maybe a couple times a lap. So get the hell out of here that it's too dangerous to wheelie. I mean, most of these riders are capable of wheeling indefinitely, forever, as long as they want, without much real danger. I mean, things can always go wrong, but I think it's silly that licensed racers are getting fined for riding their bike the way it's built to be ridden.
Yeah, for sure. I think in all levels of racing, burnouts, I can understand why you maybe get a fine as people who own the track, maybe damaging of property. That's up for debate. But wheelies, definitely no fine at all. That's a celebration. I think that's harmless unless you're, I mean, we're not all perfect riders. Even us pro guys can crash no problem, even on something silly. But it definitely wheelies should be a part of racing.
Yeah, and people love it. Like, all the fans are like, do a wheelie, you know, and like, give them what they want. That's what they came here for.
Exactly. But as you're doing it, you're counting in your head, cha-ching, cha-ching, of all the fines that you're going to get.
Just tell them, oh, I didn't mean to. It was a power wheelie.
Yeah, I had no control over it.
My throttle was stuck. I was just managing it with the brake, just trying not to crash.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
That's not true. Unless I guess you have data and telemetry. Let me look at your data logger. Do you run data loggers of any sort?
I don't. No, I'm pretty old school, I'd say. No traction control, anti-wheelie, pit limiter, none of that stuff. I'm a raw talent riding kid who just goes out there and gives it his all.
What about like a GPS lap timer for sector data or braking points or anything like that?
Not on the bike, no. We usually just, with Moto America, they have different sector times printout sheets. We usually just look at those, or we have our own little stopwatches. Old school, baby.
Yeah. Well, if you're ever interested, I actually sell GPS lap timers and their data loggers too. Some of them are bike specific. You can plug and play it right into your model. Others are universal so that you can put it on a go-kart or a motorcycle, whatever you want. And it doesn't have to be a certain bike. I think they're so helpful to have. You can compare data with somebody else, or you can look at different things. You can see exact positions on track, or when you get on the throttle, when you get on the brake. You can hook it up to like brake pressure sensors, potentiometers for suspension travel, and all sorts of different hookups. I mean, you can get really into it. You can spend a couple $100s to a couple $1,000s on these things. I mean, the options are limitless.
They definitely provide with a lot of information. They're definitely helpful. But man, that price tag, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think my own personal internal GPS lap timer works just well.
For sure. But, you know, it would be interesting to see if you do have a teammate and you're doing these Moto America rounds, if they would be able to have something like that on the bike just to try it out and to test it on, if you guys have any other riders in the same class anyways, you could say, well, if you had a faster rider and a slower rider, say, oh, well, he's braking 50 feet further in turn three than you are. And that's where you can make up some time. Like those basic numbers, or you can see the braking points are really helpful to say, or to relay information on how to go faster.
For sure. Yeah. No, being a part of the Gratitude Racing Academy, that's one of the nice things is with Trevor and Liam both also being in the Twins Cup class. Definitely going to be going to them quite a bit, learning from them and seeing where their breaking point is, how deep are they going in, you know, all that good stuff.
And one thing I learned from Jason Uribe, I don't know if you're familiar, he raced in World Superbike, but he's also does Moto America Superbike, Aussie Dave Racing, I think he was on, if I'm not, I think that's right.
And, yeah, I believe so. He's also a firefighter too.
Yeah, out in California. And he was saying one of the things he learned from being in World Superbike was to be on the brakes really hard for way longer than he actually expected. Like before, he was getting off of the brakes sooner and, you know, not holding the brakes as hard. And he said that's something that the top guys are really mastering is stomping on the brakes. Like Top Rack, he's out of control. You're braking, doing all these sorts of endos coming to the corner. That's just his normal style now.
Yeah, that's insane what he can do on a motorcycle. But yeah, definitely, I've been learning recently lighter, longer. That's something that's been teaching me. I've heard that's what the Yamaha Championship Riding School has been teaching people is lighter, longer. Being on the brakes earlier here, but it helps you control speed better before going into corner entry and mid corner. So, and I'm also working on trail braking too. That's something I kind of struggle with. But again, that's just from how I was taught as a racer. I was told to get all your braking and shifting upright and then throw it in there and be the first on the throttle. So,
yeah, you know, that's cool to hear, because something I think I came up with is if you're having trouble hitting the apex, get it on the corner sooner, but or get on the brakes sooner, but slower is what I would say, which is basically the same thing, lighter, but longer, right?
Lighter, longer, a little bit less pressure brake. Instead of jabbing on the brakes, you're just grabbing a little bit earlier, but lighter, and helps you. It's an easier way of controlling your corner speed, your entry speed.
Yeah, and then, you know, getting off the brakes and trail braking is probably, I think, one of the biggest places you can make up time, because a guy like Marquez, you know, he's just flirting with that ragged edge every time he's in the corner. Like, that's how committed you have to be if you really want to be at the limit and at the edge of the world championship almost every year. Like, you just have to ride that fine line. And I just talked with a guy, Andrew Stevenson of Cornerspin, who's a dirt riding coach. It's basically dirt training for road racers is their slogan, or how they market it. And if you can master the slide, master, you know, slide in the front, slide in the rear, not being under the limit, not being way over the limit, but riding on that very small line of the limit is really where race winning lap times come from. And that pure confidence of being able to set lap records, because if you can save the slide on a 100cc dirt bike, and you're confident with pushing it and saving it and keeping going and like nothing happened, then you can replicate that on an SV or a twins bike or any other bigger bikes. And it's much easier to do that now once you're confident on a less risk machine.
For sure. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I kind of got into flat track, was to, as a training tool for being able to control the front end push and slide and getting sideways and not having all that traction and just trying to reach for it and feel for it. But I've definitely heard of Cornerspin. They're out here in North Carolina. I'm stationed out here. So maybe one of these days on a weekend, I'll have to go over there and check them out. But I've got a little KLX 140 that I'm building right now for supermoto or flat track and that aspect as well. So, but again, it comes down to time and money.
Oh yeah. You know, tell me a little bit about your flat track or your supermoto experience, because I've been getting into supermoto last year and did some XR100, did a Kawasaki 250, Husqvarna 450. I just borrowed my buddy's bikes for a couple of days, different track days, and man, I had a blast. That's like the XR100 was very manageable. Obviously, it's not that fast of a bike, but it's cool to just get a feel for it. And I had never done any supermoto, so it's dirt bikes with slick tires, maybe 15% dirt, but they also have a jump, and I've never jumped a motorcycle really before, so that was a whole new experience.
So the supermoto that I was doing was a series back in where I was from in Illinois. Started, I think, when I was 6 or 7 years old on a little 50, and just kept going up from there. But now I've got a 250 that I do supermoto on mostly, and flat tracking as well. But it's a blast. It's a whole another game. I'm not very good at jumping. I like to stay on the ground. If I'm up in the air, there's usually something going wrong. So,
yeah, you know, it's like I thought of it like a jet ski, because I rode jet skis a little bit, and you have to steer with the rear. You can't be off the gas. I mean, it's going to slide. That's normal. You just have to be able to control the slide and not get all whiskey throttle on it. You got to be really smooth. You got to be really careful with your body position and your body weight, because it matters more when you're in the dirt. You just got to be careful with the slide.
Yeah, definitely when it comes to for flat tracking like that. Yeah, you want to be smooth on the throttle. And it's things that I've been getting taught by a friend of mine from back home. His name's Casey Cisco. He's a production twins rider, actually, in AFT. And him and his dad have been helping me out the whole flat track scene. But they make it look so easy Man, I'll tell you what, the first time I did flat track, I was amazed by how difficult it was. Now it's slowly getting easier, but I guess that is for anything really. The more seat time you get, the better you get at it. But as part of my training, I'll take my little 140 that I've got and I'll put a street tire on the rear and then just go ride in the dirt, and being able to get the easy throttle roll on and finding that traction.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how do you get into flat track, or what is the best bike you think to do entry level track day flat track, if that's a thing?
Entry level flat track, definitely like XR 100 or CRF 100. They're such a great all around motorcycle for being able to train. I mean, Kenny Roberts back in the day was training on those with some of the guys that he's even brought up. I remember listening to a podcast with about John Kaczynski, and he was over at Kenny Roberts' place and they would battle it out on the XR 100s.
Yeah.
And you're doing mostly like ovals, left turns most of the time?
No, definitely involving the right turns. If you get too comfortable with the lefts, you're going to be struggling when it comes to the right-handers. So I definitely kind of like what Nicky Hayden was doing when he was growing up. He'd run the same amount of laps as he did the other way. If you did 100 laps left, you're going to do 100 laps right.
I gotcha. So you might be an oval, but you're doing both directions.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it's more like a road racing course, like maybe a TT with rights and lefts, or if it was just the ovals.
Well, every once in a while, I'll create a little road course, a corner track in the sand pit down the road here. But for the most part, at least when it comes to a flat track, and I try to do both sides.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, people always dog on it. It's like, well, you're only going left. Like, yeah, but that's not the point. It's still racing. You're on a bike. You're sliding. Like, it might sound boring, I guess, if you just were to say it. But if you understand what's involved with it and the difficulty, like, it doesn't matter that they're going left. Like, it's really difficult. People are passing each other. They're making dives up the inside. They're trying to go around the outside. He's, like, breaking too much, and he's almost losing the front. Like, it's exciting. You know, I worked, actually, my first flat track event for ARMA at the Daytona in January, the first weekend of January. They did the road racing stuff for ARMA, so it was all vintage bikes, but Josh Herrmann was out there with his brand new Ducati and racing in one of the classes and getting ready for the 200. But afterwards, they had the flat track event, all vintage bikes, and we were all in our gear still, and we're like, you guys need workers? So we all went out there and just helped out, and everybody, for the most part, kept it up. There were very few crashes. I was impressed. One of the worst crashes that happened was like the pit bike race. The guy wasn't wearing
his seat. Usually is.
He was probably drunk as hell. And some guy got really close to him and he just wadded it up. I think he got scared. Like, he was going to hit. He might have hit him, but he didn't touch him. He just went for a pass and he was fine. And he got scared and he wasn't ready for it. And he was pretty dazed, but I think.
Yeah, that's happened to me before. I was actually doing a practice day for flat track in Pennsylvania when I was stationed in Maryland. And Dan Bromley was there with him and Nick Henderson, and going into a corner. All of a sudden he comes blazing by me right on the outside, and he parks it right in the mid corner, just like, you know, he's doing his normal thing, but you know, I'm still new to it all, and I have nowhere to go, no front brake. I panicked and I squared up on him. I felt so bad.
Yeah. You know, that happens actually, I think, quite a bit, where a faster rider do a flyby, will pass another rider, maybe not intentionally, but very closely, where they think it's completely fine. And it's probably fine in a racing pass or a racing move, but it might be a track day situation, or maybe not as an intense of a situation as that pass called for. And the slower rider getting past ends up crashing pretty bad because they get scared or something.
I think in the as an expert and then a novice together. I agree. But in that scenario, it was just my fault, completely my fault. I was like the fifth time ever riding flat track. And so I was still learning and it was really slick and I just couldn't get the bike to turn. It was a bad day. Let's put it that way.
So what are your tips for people getting into flat track? Tips for the slide.
As a flat track, I'm not an excellent flat tracker by any means, but as a road racer and for Supermoto, definitely learn how to use the rear brake. It's huge. It definitely, even in road racing, we actually use a rear brake, you know, whether it be as a wheelie control, traction control on corner exit, at least on bigger bikes, 600s, 1000s, when you're spinning up the rear, definitely learn how to use the rear brake. That's something that I struggle with. So
are you a proponent of the thumb brake?
Yeah, that's actually one of the parts, specialty parts we got on the SV this year is a lever rear brake. So we're going to try that out and see how it feels.
Is that the first year it's allowed? I'm not sure about the specific rules package.
In Twins Cup, it's allowed. Yeah. One of our previous riders, they had it on their bike. So
nice. So, I mean, for people who don't know, it's really sometimes difficult to use a brake in right-hand turns because your foot's kind of cramped in the wrong spot. And it's just very awkward. You have to put your heel on the peg and put your foot in a way that feels like it's not natural. So then you're not going to be dragging your knee the right way, kind of. And it's just,
yeah, it's a whole awkward position. You feel like a goofball when you're like, man, people are probably making fun of me right now, by the way I look.
To get a compilation of pictures together, people like looking super awkward.
Why is he doing that? Yeah,
like he's all crossed up and he's riding from the 70s, like kind of.
Yeah, he's doing it old school Dorito style. Yeah.
So the thumb brake can kind of be a solution to that. I haven't used it. Full disclaimer: I sell the thumb brake. I think it's Acasato and maybe Discositi, Italian brands.
Bless you.
You're right. Exactly. But yeah, man, they're great products and, they aren't super cheap though. I think they're a couple $100 for that trick brake lever, but it could be worth it if you actually use it, because that's the reason why I think people don't love the rear brake, because it's like, you can't use it half the time if you're going right or as long. You can still use it when you're up and down, but when it becomes to, actually getting more towards the apex and trail braking, it becomes less effective.
Yeah, for sure.
And you see all sorts of different levers and buttons on a MotoGP bike. They have like different clutch levers, and I don't even know what all the buttons do. But
pit limiters, computer they're riding.
Pit limiters and different settings. I'm sure knobs they can change. It's like a Formula One wheel on a dashboard.
Yeah, I was watching a video of them doing a launch on I'm assuming a practice or qualifying session, but. They stop and then they press a button and then it just lowers down like a drag bike. And it's like, man, no wonder they're getting killer starts, but they need it as well with how much power they've got underneath of them. But I can only imagine how much money is there alone in electronics.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard figures like those bikes are $2 million.
That's insane.
I mean, they're all prototype brand new things. And, I don't know. I don't think this is true for MotoGP as much, but for Formula One, I'm going to butcher the statistic, but it's something like every other weekend, 10% of the car is brand new. Like they're developing brand new parts all the time. They're like, we're going to try a new winglet here. We're going to try a new piece for this aerodynamic whatnot. Like they're always trying to make things a little bit more durable, a little bit better. Like they just like any major race team, every weekend is a full deconstruction of the machine and rebuild all the little tiny bearings and bushings and consumables and oil filters and oil, you know, changes and what. So they're looking at every piece of wear that they can and trying to make it better.
How would they have a consistent platform though? That's something that would, if you're always testing, it's hard to get good, accurate, consistent data to give the driver, I guess, in that case, the best car.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of it's the same, but they're changing small bits and pieces to improve reliability or durability, I think most of the time, and trying to make things lighter. Yeah, but if you change everything at once, how do you know what worked or what was the issue?
Yeah, that would be a good question just to try and ask, I guess, as a track crew the next time you're at a car event. Be like, how do you guys do this?
Yeah, a lot of manufacturing and making parts at the last second, it sounds like.
They got a whole CNC machine in their pit.
They do. They got some argon in the back just in case. But yeah, a lot of people are making their own products or trying to, manufacture bodywork and making different things from scratch. It's cool to see everybody's being so industrious, like every trying to prototype different parts, and I think it's cool.
Yeah, that's definitely something like I'm interested in, even if I'm not racing. Once I get out of the military, I plan on going back to school, and I've been looking at motorsports engineering. I feel like that's something that I can also relate to racing too, to maybe get an advantage. But there's also other racers out there like Carl Soltis. He's an auto engineer, so yeah, he probably knows the ins and outs and has a lot of calculation stuff in the back of his head.
For sure, he's a buddy of mine. He lives like 30 miles away, I think. And back in the day, I raced against him. And yeah, he's a good guy at the time. And when we were doing it, it was a lot of fun. And he became a master engineer, and he was able to continue affording it, and I couldn't, which is why I'm not racing right now, and it's killing me. So I'm trying to build this business and sell enough parts that I can go back out there and do it full time.
There
But
you
in the
go.
meantime, I'm racing other things like go-karts and mountain bikes. I've won championships in and foot races and tough mudders. I think I've done four tough mudders so far, and doing like 5Ks, 10Ks. I did a 10-mile race. I did a half, couple half marathons. I haven't done a full marathon, but I have done indoor triathlon, which is like a pool, stationary bike, treadmill type of thing. But yeah, just trying to stay in the sport as many ways as I can, and now doing the track marshal thing, so helping out at the racetrack. And this year I'll be a coach for brand new riders. I mentioned the MSF, Motorcycle Safety Foundation.
Yeah.
I'll be an instructor for that this year. I'm excited
Right
to
on.
and teach new riders getting their license and doing street riding stuff. But that's kind of the first step. I also want to do coaching for motorsports as well. But I just want to start at the groundwork and work my way up and do maybe some supermoto coaching or road race coaching, karting I would love to do, and driving as well. So all of it, man.
Yeah, I'm actually going to kind of give back to the community too. I'm going to be a control rider for a track day organization in the Indianapolis area. It's CarMoto Track Days. They're going to be doing track days at Putnam and whatnot. So it's my
Nice.
kind of little way of giving back to the community, and hopefully we can keep the motorcycle community alive and continue growing.
For sure. I learned everything I know from doing track days and just talking to people and asking questions. And at first you're like, oh no, I don't know anything. These guys are so fast. They probably don't want to talk to me. But that's not the case at all. Like, we just want to help everybody stay in the sport and get faster and learn and not get hurt, and just see the sport grow and bring new people in. So like, if you don't know something, ask. I'm sure that people would love to help.
Exactly, man. That's 100% the truth. All we want to do is just keep the sport alive and help everybody, make sure everybody's safe and getting faster all at the same time.
For sure. So tell me a little bit about people who have been helping you out with like sponsorship. I'm sure you got a couple of people out under your canopy.
Yeah, absolutely. So Team MIM, that's our family team. You're at two racing when they into selecting me and part of the academy. EK Moto, Heiser Cycle Racing, up in Maryland. Pro Things Apparel, really good if you ever want some pit shirts made. Craftbow Motorsports, Michael Hill Promotions, definitely a big shout out to Michael Hill. He's been helping me out a lot. And yeah, that's about it.
Pretty good group of people.
Absolutely. Definitely wouldn't be where I'm at without all those guys.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking to get some pit shirts made. They make like the nice ones with the collars that you got to wear around the pro weekends.
Oh yeah, gotta look professional.
And what was that company again?
Pro Things Apparel. I'm definitely want to say they're out of the Indiana area.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to get some of those made. Actually, my brother bought me for Christmas this year. I do a lot of cycling and bicycle racing, mountain biking, and road cycling. So he got me like a kit of bibs, I guess you call them, of like a top
Yeah.
and shorts with a butt pad in them. And actually, I've been lazy. Sorry, Kevin. I gotta send him pictures and get all the files right because what the plan was is to get my logo on it and it'd be like an ESR Eric Spawn Racing bib kit, cycling kit, and then have like I have 34 brands though. I'm not going to put 34. I don't think I can fit 34 logos plus my logo on it. So I got to be selective which ones I pick. So I might just do road racing brands. I think that's maybe 20. Maybe just be even more selective from there. I don't know. I got to pick and choose. I think which was that's why I'm so like I don't know which ones to put on it yet. But I gotta narrow it down and just pick something. But I'm excited to get
Yeah.
them in probably blue and white, some sort of pattern on it, and black, I
Be
think.
so thick.
So I don't know. I'll probably throw like a checker flag in there and make it look racy.
Yeah, you got to make it look racy.
So it's cool to represent and have that custom branded stuff. I've made a couple shirts and things before, but I see a lot of the racers are selling merch. Do you have anything for fans to purchase?
Not right now. No, I'm currently working on that though. I definitely have been getting some personal messages about stickers and posters made and hoodies, t-shirts, all that stuff. So hopefully this year we're going to have that out for the fans and everybody can start to put up a website and go from there.
Yeah, if you're looking for someone, my personal logo, or I shouldn't say logo, my personal decal sticker company is Pop Shadow Decals. They were in Illinois, but they moved, I believe, to Florida recently. So they ship anywhere in the world, but great people, T and Steve. And that's where I get all my I got like a 3-inch sticker, a 6-inch sticker, a 12-inch, and I just bought a 2-foot to put on the back of my truck. So I got a nice big ESR.
A huge ESR on the back there.
It could be bigger. I wish, but the thing is, like the handle is right in the middle of it. So I'm like, I don't want it to be in the middle of the handle. Maybe there's a way to conceal it better. I'll just do like the chrome delete so you don't even see the handle.
There you go. Now we're thinking.
But
But I actually do have a decal guy, R9 Designs. He does a lot of the decals, graphics kits for the AFT riders. And so he's actually helping. I'm getting him into the road racing scene as far as motorcycle road race graphics. So yeah.
yeah, there's a lot of great people out there. Everybody has their own style of graphics. Some people get their numbers done, different styles and all that too.
For sure.
So we got over an hour already. I gotta get some dinner here in a little bit. So let's wrap it up. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we ended?
And that's just about everything that I have. I mean, shout out to mom, dad, and all of my sponsors. So hopefully this year's the year.
Sure, man. Well, I'll take some time to get this edited and post it, and I'll be sure to tag you when it does drop.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate it. Good to
All
meet
right,
you.
I'll see you at the racetrack.
See you, man.
Have a good one.
You too.